All right, leaders, glad to be back with you this week. This is Donnie Fisher with the Aletheia Leaders Podcast. Last week, we played part one of a candid conversation I had with Pastor Adam about leadership here at Aletheia, and we discussed a lot of what it looks like to be a leader in regards to what the Bible has to say. The Bible teaches us that really leadership is just taking responsibility for others in the same way that Jesus did for us. Today, in the second half of the conversation, you're going to hear a little bit more about what does positional leadership look like, and even what does it look like to lead with someone else or on a team. We discuss some ideas about what makes those things healthy, what makes them effective, but also what are some of the qualities and attributes that we look for as we call leaders up into leadership. So this isn't just for you to think in what areas you may grow, but also the idea and hope is as you listen today, you'll be able to identify future leaders who are coming up underneath your leadership, people that you are currently leading who God is calling to bear weight and take responsibility in new significant ways. So I hope you're blessed today by the second half of the conversation that I had with Pastor Adam.
It's much more fun to do this with you here, Tyler. Hi, Tyler.
Hey.
Hey, you've got like a suede hat on today.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now, like Adam, now that we've talked a little bit about...
It's like a gerbil.
Sorry. Those of you who are just tuning in, Tyler walked into the room rather late because he had to go pick up an umbrella at the airport. Pastor Adam, how much did we just figure out that he paid for that umbrella?
He spent $25 retrieving a $25 umbrella.
Harvard. That's like the kind of the Harvard degree logic.
Expose him!
Tyler's not talking because he's ashamed. But Tyler, welcome back.
We love you. We're really glad that you're here. You should talk to the folks over at MIT about value. I don't know if post-modernity has hit your math classes that hard that you've now deconstructed addition. But
oh, there Tyler goes. He just quit, everybody.
Yeah, right.
We have a new opening.
All right, we're done. You don't have to put that in.
All right, so now we're back. We're going to be talking about leadership, continuing to talk about leadership and maybe poor ways to berate people. Pastor, the other thing I wanted to ask, take a little bit of a shift, because we talked about leadership is taking responsibility for somebody else. That's basically, I mean, that is true. That's foundationally true. But when we look at church leadership or organizational leadership of any kind, there's also roles that people carry. And so I just wanted to ask about the idea of positional leadership within the local church.
Yeah.
So beyond simply, okay, if you're a Christian, you're called to lead. Scripture, we recognize things like deacons and elders mm-hmm. from Scripture, but there's the idea that there are those who are called to carry weight beyond simply making disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if that's technically beyond that, but it's
somehow different.
Yes,
and the New Testament has some words to describe how it's somehow different. This is something the early church wrestled with. So in the book of Acts, the church explodes into existence and all kinds of amazing things are happening. And they hit an admin problem, as a lot of growing ministries do. That's the first thing they hit, which was, oh no, the care for widows isn't happening equally. It's happening in an unfair way. It's not, the lists aren't working well. What do we do? And the apostles make a wise decision. They go, okay, well, our ministry is mostly a ministry of the word and of prayer. Mm-hmm. We need deacons. And the word deacon literally means just helper, like someone who comes along and helps.
Yeah.
And so they literally said, we need helpers. Now, of course, we've taken the word deacon, which is a Greek word, and we've kind of anglicized it, made it like a positional word.
Mm-hmm.
But they just said, we need helpers. And then... And so they were like, oh, well, here's some of the requirements for being a helper. They should be godly and filled with the Spirit and, you know, well thought of and all those other things. And so then they appointed the first deacons.
Yeah.
And the first martyr, Stephen, was a deacon in the church. And so what they did there was appoint people to do something in addition to the call of all Christians to lead others in the way of, you know, leading them to and toward Jesus. And so in the way that translates 2,000 years later to a very different culture like ours is we have positional leaders. We have small group leaders. We have ministry team leaders. We have staff leaders. We have, and then of course we have like elders and staff pastors and things like that, that are different kinds of positional leaders, each one of those, taken not in a one-for-one corollary out of the New Testament, but rather from the principle that, yes, it seems to be wise to appoint positional leaders to do things that free up others to do the other things. And that's what we've done and okay. what most churches have done.
Sure. Do you think the onus is more on the, say, like a current elder or pastor to call people up into that leadership, or on the potential positional leader, you know, to say, hey, I feel like I'm called to this? Where do you think the onus lies?
Well, if I'm thinking scripturally, I can think of a good number of examples of a leader, like an apostle, calling someone up into service. I am struggling to think of a moment when a person just volunteered themselves into service. Although, I can think of like in the writings of Paul when he talks about sending Epaphroditus, and Paul would say things, I have no one like him who serves you in every way. Or Timothy, like I he's like a son to me. So probably we could say, well, those guys exhibited something that looked like leadership or looked like spiritual sonship. So so it's probably, therefore, at least if we're taking the Bible as our cue, the responsibility of a leader to say, hey, you can do this, you should do this, and to call them up into service rather than someone merely volunteering themselves up into. I'm the type of person who would volunteer himself up into, you know, authority, which carries with it a whole bunch of liabilities, right? Because 92.6% of the time that I've done that in my life, it's been mingled with or entirely encapsulated by my own flesh. So there's a degree of humility that's very hard to have when you're volunteering yourself for a higher position of authority or leadership.
Right.
But when someone calls you up, I mean, Jesus said, don't go just sit at the head of the table. Like, rather sit down on the floor and be invited to the table. Mm. That's better than, you know, the rebuke of, yo, that's not your seat. Go sit on the floor. So, as I think out loud with you, it's probably the responsibility of current leaders to call others into leadership.
Yeah. Well, so what are some of the characteristics that you look for? I know that we've, as for those of you who are listening and you've been listening to this podcast and you've seen some of the stuff, or maybe you're already, especially if you're already on leadership at Aletheia, you carry some kind of positional weight, you know that we look for faithfulness, availability, if you're involved and teachable and you're hungry. What are some of those over the years that what are some of the characteristics that have marked successful leaders, in your opinion, who've been called up? It could be those five. It could be something.
It is those five. And all I can think of right now are the moments when I've not looked for that.
Yeah. What are some of those?
I've looked for talent.
Okay.
I think we're all attracted to talent. Like, I mean, we pay a lot of money to watch someone very talented at, you know, playing the guitar.
Yeah.
We call that a concert. We pay a lot of money to watch someone very talented at a sport, you know, do that. And so we like talent. We're attracted as a culture to talent. And so when I see someone who I can identify, oh, they've got a great talent that I admire, I have tried in the past to skip the steps of testing their character, of seeing if they would be faithful, available, involved, teachable, and hungry, and just gone, well, I'm sure I can impart those things to them because look how much talent they have, which is profound arrogance on my part as a leader maker. And without fail, every single time I've done that, it has not gone well. Every single time. However, when I have looked at people who were faithful and available and involved and teachable and hungry for God, it has not yet failed.
Yeah.
That they have been a good leader and called up into what they should do. So if anything, my own experience is like a warning. Don't just look for talent. In fact, kind of ignore it. I mean, talent becomes important after character, not before. And I was guilty of looking at talent first.
That's a good point. We used to say, we promoted, going back to our campus ministry days, I remember Gabe and others would say promote based on faithfulness and fruitfulness, which, I mean, faithful already number one, but all those other things, available, involved, teachable, and hungry, that produces a fruitfulness.
Absolutely.
It's so easy, I think, for us to look at somebody's credentials or their, what they have after their last, I mean, even like physically, how much money they might have or how much, what kind of a benefit. We see so much potential in somebody based upon their either talent or their natural resources, that it's always tempting as a leader to try to promote people. But rather looking at these things maybe kind of like Jesus did, and saying, okay, who's actually here and giving themselves? And I think it's huge for us. What do you think? I have an opinion on this, but I was curious. What do you think maybe the strongest one or two characteristics are for teams that lead? Like, you know, okay, this is kind of, I know this is kind of left field. I didn't prepare him for this question, guys, but whether it's our staff team that we're building by God's grace, our team is growing here, but even thinking through like leading groups with another leader, or leading a team, all of our teams now have multiple leaders. Mm-hmm. They're people carrying responsibilities. What do you think is one or maybe two of the strongest attributes that help those relationships remain successful in leadership when you think about leading on teams?
In no particular order, as I process out loud, unity around the mission is pretty critical. So when a team knows what it's there to do, mm-hmm. then there's power in that. Clear lines of responsibility and authority. Mm-hmm. I think when that is unclear, the devil hides in, I think, the fog of misunderstood relationships. So if I don't know who my direct report is or who's most responsible for a thing or the person with whom the buck stops in any particular thing, then my temptation is going to be to overfunction. I'm just going to take charge of that and not trust and not let go.
Yeah.
But when I know, oh, so-and-so is taking responsibility for this thing and I know their character, then it becomes far easier for me to go, okay, here you go, and hand off authority.
Yeah.
And responsibility. Another one would be diversity of gifts and talents. We talk a lot about in our culture how diversity is a strength. I don't think diversity all by itself is a strength. Diversity could be a profound weakness if we don't like each other or if we're not unified around a mission.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, there diversity is strength in my marriage because we are married.
Yeah.
But if I were to say, oh yeah, I, you know, love my wife because we're entirely opposite and we don't agree on anything, like that, diversity is strength when it is encapsulated in unity of mission and love. And so one thing I love about our church is that it's diverse and diverse, unified around the mission and teachings of Jesus. And so the same thing on like our staff team. Like I look around every Monday morning when we're having our staff meeting and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. None of these people are like me and they're really not like each other either.
Yeah.
And that, so we can have really dynamic conversations from very different perspectives about something we all agree is important and we all agree Jesus has asked us to do together. Mm-hmm. And then we have like profound wisdom and insight from all these different perspectives because we have unity in and diversity, and those things have to happen in tension. So maybe
I
those
heard once that's where the word university came from.
Yes,
unity and diversity.
Ideally, well, it's the consilience of knowledge around one major idea divided up into different departments. Now it's more like a multiversity, but yes,
nerd.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry. Okay. So,
guilty.
I would add to that, I think to see teams, I think you're absolutely right on all those things. Mission, clarity of authority, like who's in charge of what are we here to do? And then even leveraging our diversity to help us be more effective, I think is powerful.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, honestly, like trust is a huge thing. I would say that really allow teams to last and to be effective as they trust one another. I was really struck, I went a couple weeks ago, to visit a church outside of Chicago, and got to sit in on a couple of their meetings and talk to some of their staff. And what just blew my mind and has been stuck with me ever since, I've been really praying through and thinking through how we might even model this, not exactly like them, but develop this strength that I just saw modeled so well, was this idea of trust. Hmm. So I didn't know, but I walked into a meeting Dave Ferguson, lead pastor of Christ Community Church there in Naperville, really big church. Great. They do a lot of discipleship. It seems like they're doing really well. And I just got to see him interact with his staff, like three or four of them. And then also via video at the same time with some site pastors for another location that they have. And they were just talking about stuff, and the way that they deferred to one another, you just sense the trust in the room. Mm. I thought it was so powerful.
That is really cool.
And then beyond that, in other meetings with other people and seeing like the communications department talk to one another or whatever, they were talking about real challenges and areas where people had dropped balls, and but also the opportunities they had and things they needed to do and the mission of the church and all those things. And they did know their lane, but they all trusted one another, even when somebody said, yeah, that was my bad. Like, you know, it was this really kind of powerful view.
It's interesting how trust engenders responsibility, because if I trust you and you know that, like, I've got your back, then you're not defensive when you make a mistake. You, sure. There's not like there's less of a temptation to be like, oh, that wasn't my fault, but rather trust engenders trust,
yeah,
and responsibility. It's interesting how that's like a positive cycle, but when there's a lack of trust, then in irresponsibility and passing the buck also goes up sort of at the same, and that's a destructive.
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen cycle. That. We've seen that here in our time of leading this church in the past 8 years. We've seen that. I've seen that in other leadership capacities as well. And I'm not saying other people. I've even seen it in my own life where, if I'm not careful, I'll get into a cycle of not trusting, and immediately I begin to accuse and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And
so it's interesting how that goes together.
What are some of the signs that, like, how do you know if you're not trusting somebody?
Usually feel it.
Yeah.
If I feel anxious about a person, I mean, it's interesting. I'm at the top of the org chart, just under Jesus. So if I don't trust someone, it's probably my fault somehow because I put them there, or I put someone there who put them there. And so if I feel a lack of trust, I've got to ask myself, well, why is that? Have they done something to violate trust? Mm-hmm. Have they proven themselves unfaithful, untrustworthy? Are they, you know, they don't turn in good work, or they're never on time, or, you know, they've begun to drop the ball somehow, either in their character or in their you know, job performance. Yeah. The other might be, I've got an unresolved personal issue, like something that they said or did that has nothing to do with work, bothered me. Mm-hmm. And I need to actually talk to them and say, hey, can we talk about this and have like human grace connection. Because when there's unresolved offense, that will also burn bridges of trust.
Yeah.
And so I think those two things are really it. If it's their fault, because, you know, I've observed a, you know, performance fail on their part, that's one thing. But then it's my responsibility as a leader to lovingly confront them and say, hey, did you know that this happened? Do you have everything you need?
Yeah.
You know, and this also let them know that this can happen again. The other might be, oh my gosh, am I just offended? Am I bothered by? Am I threatened by? Am I, you know, is it something in me? I
mean, yeah.
Oftentimes it's some dynamic of those two things together, but.
I was super helped years ago by Andy Stanley. I was listening to something he said, and he was talking about this idea of trust and leadership. And he said, you always know there's a gap in trust when you're having an argument with someone in your head and you're coming up with all the reasons why you're right and they're not. And like,
yeah,
that all of a sudden, like, oh, like,
oh, no,
I don't actually
I have enormous trust issues.
Yeah, that really helped me a ton. Yeah. Because I am very prone to do that. Sure. I think I've grown out
it's
of
weird.
That.
I always win the arguments in my head.
Yes. Yes. One typically does. But Tyler's right now sitting across the room from us arguing with us in his head and winning everyone.
Who's winning?
Tyler's winning.
No, Tyler's okay. Winning.
All right. So, all right. Well, great. Well, any parting thoughts on leadership. We're at Aletheia. We have this big, massive vision.
Yeah.
To see our region impacted. I mean, by just church plants. We're 8 years in, but we've just begun many ways. God's mm-hmm. been so gracious to us. He's given us some really cool leaders. Some who've invested. You know, a short season here, others who've been with us for as many as 8 years, some of them. And by God's grace, he's grown this church, mm-hmm. and we have seen people come to Jesus. We just had mm-hmm. baptisms this past Sunday. I think we baptized 11, 12 people. Excited about that. I feel like we have new wind in our sails.
Absolutely, we do.
And not that things are ever bad, but just a fresh just, I feel just personally, even a fresh excitement about this idea of making disciples, taking responsibility for others, taking the gospel to our city, to our region. Mm-hmm. Any last thoughts for our leaders about, you know, maybe visionarily what that's going to take from us, and maybe even the promises God has for us as a leadership group?
The first thing I would say is, leaders, it's thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing what Jesus commanded you to do. And thank you for taking responsibility for others. And thank you for coming under the leadership of, coming under my leadership and coming under the leadership of our staff and elders. Second is, we have to reproduce ourselves. And this comes from the top all the way down. I believe it is my job to reproduce myself. I just came from another conversation with another pastor in another city, and he was just decrying the tragedy of some of his dear friends who are just holding on too long and are just now in their 60s thinking about, you know, succession. And it just reiterates to me, my job is to reproduce myself. My job is to create the deepest bench and to get out of the way, to train, to equip, to empower, and to make more leaders. It's not a zero-sum game. It is very much the more leaders we create and call up, the more we can do for King Jesus. The need is great. The harvest is plentiful. So leaders, thank you, but also leaders, make new leaders, call those people up. Even if you think they're, you know, B minus ready, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because the way you get used to the weight of leadership is by taking on the weight of leadership. And the third thing I would say to our leaders is pray, ask God for wisdom and discernment, figure out what it would mean for you to take responsibility and for you to also take responsibility for, calling other leaders up into leadership, whether it's just other leaders taking, you know, making disciples or positional leadership. Either way, this is part of what it means to make disciples. It's intrinsically linked to leadership. And so join us.
Well, there you have it. There were some candid thoughts between me and Pastor Adam on leadership. As always, it's a joy to hear from him. So thankful that he serves us in this capacity as our lead pastor. But from both of us, we are so excited about what God is doing in this church family, what he's doing through this church family, how he's using us to impact the city and this region. And you all are a huge part of that. So leaders, thank you. We'll be back with you next week. God bless. We'll see you soon.